things get a little bit festive. But this is especially Holly Jolly.
Did you tell the police she was ran over by a reindeer?
Yep. Witchy candy cane stuff. Ah! That made me marry!
A gingerbread girl amateur hour. I got all of my shit done today.
I'm so proud of you.
I have to binge do it. Otherwise, I do a day of, and it's just, like, subpar research. Like, yeah. These two episodes.
See, I've been doing a lot of... If we record on, say, Thursday night, I will know that I have to have them done by then. And then it's, like, Sunday, and I have all day. And I'm like, I have so much time. And then I don't do them on Sunday.
Yeah, and then you when scramble.
When I should... And I just, like, why are you doing this to yourself? Mm-hmm. And I even have two monitors now.
Wow.
I know. And so I've been able to, like, watch a YouTube video on my left-hand side and type at the same time. It's magic.
Who is she?
I know.
Have you been slowing the YouTube video down?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Indeed.
It's nice, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really excited about it.
Mm. Okay. Rolo completed.
Excellent. Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm running low. And I'll tell you why.
Because I ate some.
Theodore.
Oh.
And Ian.
Oh, that little teddy bear.
Have found the Rolos.
Aha.
I caught him, Theo, sneaking out of here with like two Rolos in his hands.
Oh
like
my God, a little munchkin.
Yeah, it's like a little mouse. Steal it. And I was like, hey, Theo, what you got in your hands? And he was like, oh,
well, what you see here.
Well, you see here is, I think that. Oh, I think I'll just go put them back. And I said, I think that's an excellent choice for you to make.
Oh, my God. Sweet little bit. He tried to give me some of his fajita when I came in. I was like, what do you got there, bud? He was like, you know how five-year-olds do. And I was like, is it a fajita? And he was like, no. And I was like, is it a taco? And he was like, kinda.
It's a fajita.
And I was like, okay. And then he's like, do you want it? It's like, he's like, got it in his hands and he's like.
Oh, it's, oh, jambled. Yeah. Here's the thing.
I was like, thank you. No.
You like to think that he's being sweet to you by offering you his food. He doesn't want to eat all of his dinner.
Oh, I knew. Oh, yeah.
You want it? He's manipulative for a five-year-old. I gotta say, I'm almost impressed.
Listen, my baby sister, her birthday is today. Happy birthday, Claire.
Happy birthday, Claire Bear.
She's 19. So we have 12 years apart. I know fully what it's like to have a manipulative small human
mm-hmm.
trying to get their way all That's the time.
The tiny humans are just like exploring mm-hmm. everybody else's emotions and how they can influence them.
Yeah.
Which I don't hate. Valuable skills.
Yeah, because like, when Claire was 5, I would have been 17.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I was like, girl. Mm-mm.
You're not doing that. You're not slick.
Turn your butt right around.
And they think they're the slickest.
Oh, my gosh. She still does.
She, to be fair, Claire Bear still thinks she's the slickest.
I love you, baby.
I love you so much, honey.
Oh, my gosh. Well, welcome to a true crime.
True Grimace episode. It's stabby but festive. We either slayin'
or slayin'.
Taylor, insert jingle bells.
If I get tagged, isn't that mean one more time? Like, it's worth it.
It's a
every
winner.
Every time I see, like, so-and-so tagged you in a post, I'm like, it's that meme.
I did add it. I couldn't stop myself. I did add it to the never-ending meme dump that is our Twitter feed.
I saw that. I loved it.
Mm-hmm. I love it. It's so much. It's just, you know, what goes better with Christmas?
Than crime.
Than crime.
Nothing.
Merry Crimus.
Yeah.
Love it.
I love it. So I'm going first, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hold on, let me do ASMR first, right?
Oh my goodness. That was pitiful. What are you drinking? Are you drinking Miller High Life? Why?
Listen, okay. It's the champagne of beer. I'll tell you why I have it. I bought it because we were anticipating Ian's father for Thanksgiving. They ended up not coming.
Oh, okay.
To keep, like, the gathering very small. And I know that Miller High Life is his favorite beer.
Oh.
So I just have it chilling in my fridge, and I'm fresh out of White Claw.
Oh.
So.
Oof.
Oof, oof okay. Indeed.
All
right. It's, I will say.
Is it not bad?
It's really not. As far as beers go, and I'm not, like, an IPA kind of gal. Really, I really think it tastes like piss.
Yeah.
And I've been around craft beer for a very long time. I bartended at a craft beer bar for many years through college. I can't get on board.
Yeah.
It's wheat ales and stouts are a far superior beer. You will not change my mind.
I would never try.
It's they're just not great. Some of them straight up taste like skunk's ass.
Blech.
It smells like, have you walked into a college dorm that somebody just had a party at, like, over that weekend, and it's, like, stale weed and vomit? It kind of tastes like that.
Okay, no, because I was never cool.
So oh, got it.
I never got to go.
I don't want to, like, disillusion anybody that I was cool. I just was a hooligan.
I was a hooligan.
But I wasn't cool.
I got invited to, like, somebody's dorm one time. And...
Was it Patrick's?
No. It was this girl I went to, I was in, like, one of her classes. We went to her dorm and hung out for a little while, and then she was like, oh, I'm gonna actually go and, like, sleep with this dude. And I was like,
oh,
do you know him? And she was like, yeah, we met today. And I was like,
that's not knowing
this
somebody.
This is not the, listen, make good choices.
Listen, hoe days are very formative years.
Listen, I'm not judging on anybody's hoe days. I've just never witnessed it happening.
In front of your eyes?
Yeah. I heard about it.
It's a sight to behold.
Yeah.
It truly is. To watch. It's like, have you seen, like, Planet Earth, the bit about the birds of paradise and how they, like, do the dances and,
oh,
like,
yeah,
fan their feathers out and they're like, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. That's college.
Okay.
That's college. It's 4 years of that.
Fun.
Yeah. It was not ideal.
It was something.
It was not ideal. That and ramen noodles.
Oh, God.
Uh-huh.
I'm pretty sure I lived on ramen noodles.
Yeah. A lot of shenanigans. Speaking of crime, let's get away from college. Let's get away from the college crimes and move on to the stabby crimes.
All right.
And you go first.
Yes.
Okay. I'm excited.
Today.
Murder, but make it festive. Okay, I'll stop now. I promise.
It's going to get really dark here very quickly, so you better get it out now.
Okay.
I'm covering the murder of Kevin Bacon. And no, not the actor Kevin Bacon. Obviously, he's still alive and well.
We had a pig at my childhood camp named Kevin Bacon.
Really?
Yeah. And Mia Hamm was the other one.
My uncle brought home a pig and my mom took it and named it Bacon.
That sounds like Joni.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I get it. Pig's name Bacon. Hilarious. Mm-hmm. All right. Dating in the 21st century sounds really, really, really hard. You put yourself out there over and over again and you have someone's profile to go off of, but that's it. Sometimes people meet the loves of our lives and live happily ever after. Unfortunately, this is a show called A Little Bit Grim, and I can assure you, Kevin Bacon did not live happily ever after.
Ooh, did he live?
No.
Okay.
Spoiler alert.
Let alone happily ever after.
No. This gruesome tale takes place not too far from us in a small town just outside of Flint, Michigan, which is only about a 2.5-hour drive from us. Mm. On Christmas Eve of 2019, yes, last year, 25-year-old Kevin Bacon and told his roommate, Michelle Myers, that he was going to meet up with a man he just met on the dating app Grindr.
Ooh, I love Grindr.
Okay.
It's just fun for me.
Uh-huh.
You know, like
scroll through.
Yeah, like, yeah. I'll, like, be like, my friends. I'll be like, let me, like, flip through Grindr.
I love to flip through other people's dating apps.
Oh, me too.
It's so fun.
Yeah.
If
you're on a dating app right now and you want Taylor and I to vet.
Oh, send them over.
Send us your login info.
We got this.
We will get you hooked up straight away.
Oh my gosh, someday if we ever do like a Patreon or something, that could be like one of the tiers. We'll vet dates for you. Oh, we would have so much fun.
Yeah, we would.
All right. Okay, this was about 5 p.m. on Christmas Eve.
Okay.
At 6:12, Kevin texted Michelle to let her know that he would be out for a while and didn't know when he'd be home. He said that he was having a great time.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, Michelle didn't think anything of it and went about the evening. The Bacon's the Bacons, so Kevin's parents, had planned to have Christmas breakfast at their home at 9 a.m. on Christmas Day.
That's early.
Yeah. Kevin's father, Carl Bacon, became very nervous when his son did not show up for breakfast, and he called the police at about 5 o'clock later that day.
Okay.
When Carl met with police, he found that his son's car had been found in a parking lot plaza near a Family Dollar, and inside they found Kevin's phone, wallet, and possibly most concerning to me was a bag of Kevin's clothes were in the back seat of the car, like the clothes he was wearing.
It's your go bag. Oh, the clothes he was wearing.
Yes.
Ooh. Did they know that that was the clothes he was wearing?
I think they got the information from Michelle.
Okay.
I do not know that fact for sure. His car keys were the only item not found with the car.
Ooh, that's
not a great sign.
It's upsetting.
On Friday, December 27th, Kevin's family and friends formed search parties. The police would not confirm that he was a missing person. So at that point, the Bacon started alerting the media, which did help get more people involved in the search parties. The police were able to track his last known location to the 700 block of West Tyrell Road in Biddington Township in Shiawassee County near Morris, Michigan. I don't know where any of those places are.
You did an excellent job getting through them.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
They arrived at the residence and they were met there by...
I jinxed you. That was my bad.
Thank you. They arrived at the residence and they were met by a man named Mark Latunsky.
Ew.
Oh, you're going to hate Mark so
much. Is it Mark with a C or Mark with a K?
Mark with a K.
That's a little basic.
Yeah. Mark is 50 years old and he had a pretty hefty mental break track record.
Mm.
He was known to stop taking his medication and he had been hospitalized previously, and his ex-wife filed a motion on August 22nd to suspend his parenting time due to untreated major depression, paranoid schizophrenia, and traits of a personality disorder.
That is a slew of issues that are difficult to manage.
Yes. Yes. Especially together.
Yes. Even independently.
Right.
That's difficult. But like all of those.
All those together.
Ooh.
This was not Mark's first encounter with law enforcement.
Oh.
In September of 2013, Latunsky was arraigned on two counts of parental kidnapping related to keeping two of his children away from their mother for more than 24 hours.
Ooh.
Records state that he took them to a hotel and refused to return them. However, he was found incompetent to stand trial in that case. The judge ordered him to outpatient treatment. On November 25th, 2019, only 1 month before Kevin went missing, Michigan State Police responded to a call saying that a man wearing only a kilt was running from their neighbor's house, and there was a man chasing after him.
What?
Yeah.
It's a little cold up here in Michigan at Thanksgiving to be running around in a skirt.
Yeah. When police questioned him, Mark Latunsky said that he was only chasing him because the kilt was very expensive.
Okay. I don't buy that for a minute.
The man wearing the kilt returned it, and he told police that he had been chained in Latunsky's basement.
Ooh.
But he said that everything that had happened had been consensual until he became spooked and ran. He did not file a complaint against Latunsky.
Do not, and I'm not trying to boss anybody on how to live your life. Don't consensually let a stranger chain you in his basement.
No. No.
Nay-nay.
We gotta have, like, I'm trying to get a little 50 shades about it. Like, we need a contract. In that case, we need at least a safe word.
We need to, like, build a rapport.
Yeah.
Like, I need to know your parents, your background. I want to know, like, the last four of your soch.
Yeah.
At
least enough to do a background check.
Yes.
That's the information that I need.
Mm-hmm. I've already scoured public records for your name.
Yep.
If you are thinking about chaining me up in a basement.
If it's even crossed your mind once. when law enforcement arrived at Latunsky's home on December 28th, Latunsky invited them into his home to have a look around. He was just like, casual, like, come on in, friends.
Ew.
The lead investigator was Detective Sergeant James Moore, a man named Robert Viviano, who is a trooper, and three more officers went into the home. So there were five of them together.
Okay.
Mark Latunsky.
That's a lot of officers to respond.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
They were able to, I might have put this in later, they were able to figure out, oh yeah, they tracked his last known location to his house.
Oh god, I was about to ask how they linked
I think it was through Grindr. they were able to track his phone, I think.
Okay.
Grindr has been very close mouth about it because they want to protect their users' privacy, which, sure.
Yeah. However.
And it's just, I don't think that there's laws in place yet about dating apps and what they can share legally or what they will share legally because they haven't been around long enough.
Yeah. That's what makes me nervous about hookup culture on Snapchat.
Yeah.
Because if you find somebody over Snapchat and you send them your location or blah, 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 all of that is deleted and it's non-retrievable. Yep. I don't think.
Yikes. Okay. So he just invited them in, like, casual, have a look around. Mark told them that his name was Wilk Olikos Vilkas.
What?
And they did a... Yeah, he just starts making up names.
They're just at like, this point. Sir, no, it's not.
No.
No, it's not.
5 minutes ago, you were Mark.
We know you.
They did a sweep of the first floor, and nothing looked out of place until they went to the basement. And I do have to put a little bit of a graphic trigger warning
here. Oh, no. This is where we're about to take a turn.
Yep. They found Kevin. He was clearly deceased, and he was hanging by his ankles from the ceiling in the basement.
I don't like how you said clearly deceased.
Mark Latunsky admitted to killing Kevin by stabbing him in the back of the neck and then slitting his throat.
Oh.
After that, he admitted to tying a rope around Kevin's ankles and hanging him from the rafters in order to drain the blood faster. And he also told police that he cut off Kevin's testicles and then later ate them.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
Oh my God.
So that's quite the graphic scene that Mark just like let the police go find.
He's like, yeah, come on in. Have a cup of tea. Meet yourself at home. Check out the dude in the basement.
Immediately, Latunsky was arrested and taken into custody. Mm-hmm. Against his Miranda warnings, he admitted to everything.
Really?
Immediately.
Okay.
And was not freaking out, wasn't, like, confessing because this had been a secret, like, so boiled up inside. Like, he just was like, yeah, I killed him.
Like, is it, like, a thing that happened?
Yeah.
Cool, calm, and collected.
Yep.
So unnerving.
Gross. At this point, he told the authorities that he was not Mark Latunsky, but his name was Edgar Thomas Hill.
Oh.
And Mark Latunsky was his nephew. He gave the name Edgar Thomas Hill at his arraignment. G got me. And to his attorney, saying that he's part of the Thomas clan of Wales, and given the Latunsky moniker as protection, according to court filings.
It's not funny because this is such a...
Mentally ill.
So mentally ill and such a devastating story for the family. But, like, the way your brain can work is baffling.
Yes. Ugh. Latunsky's lawyers filed an insanity plea, but was found competent to stand trial. And everything... So this happened last December.
Mm-hmm.
So Kevin's funeral was January 3rd. And he didn't even start his, like, hearings or trial until January. And then everything got put on hold because of COVID.
Oh. Has he still not been sentenced or tried?
He has not been sentenced. He has been...
Did he plead guilty?
No.
Oh.
Oh, I'm getting there.
Okay, sorry.
But we still don't know what he's been sentenced to, basically.
Oh, okay. Because
this was in October of 2020.
Whoa.
So, 2 months ago.
Okay.
Is our latest update.
So, we're going to have, like, future...
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll cover it. Or I'll probably put it in a grab bag.
Yeah.
Latunsky's lawyers filed an insanity plea, but was found competent to stand trial in October of 2020. This is from the Fox 2 Detroit website. The 50-year-old had previously pleaded insanity and was ordered to a lockdown mental health treatment facility in Ypsilanti. Wild, because I have property in Ypsilanti. I go there, like, once a month. So he was in the lockdown facility there.
That's wild.
However, under Michigan law, even if being found unfit for trial, it can still be reviewed. Once declared unfit, defendants start a 15-month program for treatment. During mm-hmm. that time, a judge can call a hearing to determine if competency has been restored.
That is correct.
If that happens, the defendant is returned to the court system for either a plea, trial, or another way to resolve the case.
And they put you back in jail, too. So, like, if they deem you or you go through this psychological evaluation that says, no, you're not fit to stand, they'll send you to, like, a mental health facility to try to, like, recoup you and get you the treatment. And then if they say, like, okay, you're cool to stand trial, they will put you back in the county or state
right.
system and not back to the mental institution yeah. that you got your assistance.
It's crazy.
It is crazy.
Letunsky alleged that this was not murder, and we just found this out, like these few details, in this most recent update in October. In this, hearing trial.
Uh-huh.
So Letunsky alleged that this was not murder, but Kevin had confided in him that he had wanted to have a sexual fantasy and also had attempted suicide in the past. According to Letunsky, the two discussed death, and Kevin asked Letunsky to help him, and that would this should be tried as an assisted suicide case.
Wow, that defense team really got on it quick, didn't yeah. they?
That request was denied. Letunsky has been charged with open murder and mutilation of a body, and the date for the trial has not been set.
Ugh.
Michigan State Police Specialist First Lieutenant David Kaiser said, "It doesn't matter if you're gay, bisexual, transgender, it's 2020, and it's okay. In the society we live in this culture, you can tell somebody, let somebody know where you're going."
Yes. Oh, I love that.
I know. Michigan Police. Getting me in my feels. Grindr statement. "We at Grindr are heartbroken to hear about this terrible tragedy and share our condolences with the Mr. Bacon's family and friends. While for privacy reasons, we do not offer public comment on individual user accounts, we remain fully committed to working with law enforcement in the event of any investigation."
Hmm.
Kevin Bacon was born November 28th,
1994. Oh, baby.
Yeah, he was 25.
Sweet.
Yeah, baby. It got me when I read that year because I was like,
He's living like the prime of his yeah. life. This is what you're supposed to be doing, meeting new people.
Yep. He was a hairstylist and constantly changing his look and enjoyed using bright colors. He loved makeup, his cats, Smokey and Fuzzy, and his dog, Hannah.
Oh.
And his favorite makeup artist was Jeffree Star.
Oh.
A girl named Chels, or at Lorston on Twitter, tagged Jeffree Star in a post with Kevin's missing person information, such as height, weight, age, and tattoos and markings, saying, "At Jeffree Star, this man was found murdered after a Grindr meetup in Michigan on Christmas Eve. I saw it on Facebook and noticed he had several Jeffree Star tattoos. I wanted you to see this, and all of us can keep his friends and family in our thoughts." And Jeffree Star retweeted saying, "RIP Kevin, I'm devastated to hear the passing of someone from Michigan who lived their life fearlessly and was taken too soon. Please keep his family in your mind in this horrible time." And linked to the GoFundMe for Kevin's funeral arrangements. Jeffree Star donated $20,000 to the family to take care of the funeral.
Mm-hmm. That's where Jeffree Star is from. He's from Michigan.
Oh, okay. Michelle Myers, Kevin's roommate, posted a very touching memorial to Kevin on her Instagram, which said, and I'm sorry, this is long, but it's good. "It's hard to put into words how the last few days have been, how I'm feeling, how things are right now. Kevin was my best friend and someone who I've been able to confide in for many years. He was one of my biggest supporters and someone who felt like I could be myself around. Kevin would brighten up any room he walked into. He loved talking about hair, makeup, fashion, and music. He loved Taylor Swift, Lady Gaga, and Jeffree Star. He was amazing at making vivid hair colors look great and was passionate and creative about his hair work. He loved the color Tiffany blue with a passion. He loved getting tattoos. He also loved his friends and family so much. He came to my band concerts at MSU and while I was in the marching band. He came to my senior recital and was my own personal hairstylist, even dyeing my hair the night before as a graduation gift. We were always able to vent to each other, and he was always so empathetic and gave me great advice and perspective when I needed clarity. He was like my own personal therapist. I remember asking Kevin not too long ago what his dreams were. If there was no limitations and he could be anything. And he said he wanted to be a hairstylist for the runway and wanted to work as a hairstylist in a major salon in a big city. I believe he fully could have accomplished these dreams. He was so creative. Kevin has had an ongoing struggle with mental health. He wanted so desperately to be happy, but sometimes that was a real struggle for him. But he always wanted to better himself and sought help when he needed it. He was always honest and transparent about things. But he always put others first before himself and was self-sacrificial in his actions. He make others happy sometimes at the expense of his own happiness, which he cared about so much about his loved ones. He felt things so deeply and emotionally. He always put his heart into the things that he did. He was so compassionate, caring, and loving. He was intuitive and intellectual. I wish it didn't have to be like this. I'm so thankful to have called Kevin Bacon my friend and like a brother to me. I'll never find anyone else like him. He's irreplaceable. I'm not ready to say goodbye to So I'll give you an update when I know what he's been sentenced to, but
that's devastating.
Heartbreaking Christmas story.
God.
I can't imagine, like, waiting for somebody on Christmas morning, because my family does Christmas breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, waiting for all my brothers and sisters to come is, and, like, part of the joy of Christmas.
Yeah, the anticipation.
Yeah, of, like, getting started and getting to sit down together. I can't imagine just sitting and waiting. Yeah, waiting and waiting.
Show up.
Yeah. So.
Ugh. Ow.
Sorry.
It's okay.
Hi, everyone. I'm Ashley.
And I'm Lacey.
And we're the co-host of the true crime podcast, United States of Murder.
Each week, we will take you on a trip to a different state exploring two lesser-known crimes, unsolved cases, serial killers, and so much more.
Get your week started off right by joining us every Monday and letting us take you on a dark tour across the U.S.
You can find us on Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to subscribe to get the latest episodes.
And don't forget to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at United States of Murder, or email us at unitedstatesofmurder@gmail.com.
Fuck, that was heavy.
You
want
to tell me a story?
I mean, yeah, mine's not any better.
Great.
I got a good old classic. A crime classic here.
Ooh.
I'm going to allude to it.
What are you doing?
Listen, holidays, family,
uh-huh,
stresses you out.
Uh-huh.
It can make you, like, resent your fam.
Oh, no.
So I have a classic.
Oh, are we doing a family annihilator?
Yes, we are.
Oh, shit.
Not only are we doing a family annihilator, we might be doing one of, like, the firsties.
Oh, really?
Because she old. She old, old.
Wait, she's a woman family annihilator?
No, I'm just talking about the crime. I'm personifying a crime. Oh. It's something, I probably shouldn't do that.
I got it. I was like, what?
She an old one.
Got it. Okay, so
old crime.
The tale itself is old.
The tale dates back to 1911.
Ooh.
Charles Lawson married Fanny Manring, with whom he had 8 children.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. That's a lot of children.
Five children.
What's our children? That's a lot of children. The third, William, born in 1914, died of an illness in 1920. In 1918, following the move of his younger brothers, Marion and Elijah, to the Germantown area, Lawson followed suit with his blooming family. The Lawsons worked as sharecropper tobacco farmers, saving enough money by 1927 to buy their own farm on Brook Cove Road. In 1929, shortly before Christmas, Lawson, age 43, took Fanny, his wife, age 37, and their 7 children. Marie, who was 17, Arthur, 16, Carrie was 12, Maybelle,
oh,
was 7, James was 4, Raymond was 2, and Mary Lou was 4 months old.
Mary Lou.
Is that cute? I had an aunt named Clara Lou.
Oh.
I just thought it was, like, the cutest. Little Mary Lou, 4 months old.
Sweet baby. Oh, you're going to tell me such horrible things.
Yeah, I am.
All right.
He took his whole family into town to buy new clothes, to have a family portrait taken.
I've heard of him. Uh-huh. Oh, no.
This would have been an uncommon occurrence for a working class rural family of the area, which has led to speculations that Lawson's act was premeditated.
Yup.
Lawson's, having purchased his own farm 2 years previous, however, together with the fact that an Associated Press wire that went out the day after the murders characterized Lawson as a well-to-do type of gentleman,
huh,
would make a pre-Christmas shopping spree appear reasonable and not raise alarm. On December 25th, 1929, 17-year-old Marie rose early to make a Christmas cake, baking 2 layers in separate pans and icing them ready for the family festivities on the farm. On the afternoon of December 25th, Lawson first shot his daughters, Carrie and Maybelle, as they were setting out to their uncle and aunt's house.
They're like 12 and 7-year-olds?
Yes, Carrie was 12 and Maybelle was 7.
Oh,
the sweet babies. He waited for them behind the tobacco barn until they were in range, and he shot them with a 12-gauge shotgun. Then ensured that they were dead by bludgeoning them to death again.
Oh, God.
He placed the bodies in the tobacco barn where they couldn't be found.
Why? Just people don't go in there?
For the rest of the family.
Oh.
So the rest of the family didn't see it. He could be like, I was carrying off a coyote or whatever.
I see.
Afterwards, Lawson returned to the house and shot Fanny, his wife, who was on the porch. As soon as the gun was fired, Marie, who was inside baking her cake, screamed, while the two young boys, James and Raymond, attempted to find a hiding place.
Oh, God.
Lawson shot Marie, and then he found and killed the two boys.
Oh, sweet boys. The one was two. Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
Finally, he bludgeoned baby Mary Lou, whose cause of death was a fractured skull. Only the oldest son, Arthur, who had been sent by his father on an errand the night before the killing, would survive.
What?
Mm-hmm. It is believed Arthur arrived back home and raised the alarm, and people began gathering at the Lawson home. Charlie was missing, but within hours, the gathering heard a single gunshot from the nearby woods. Arthur and police officer found Charlie's body in letters he had written. Footprints encircled a tree, and it was later supposed that Charlie had paced around the tree in circles for hours before killing himself. Charlie Lawson's letters did not explain why he had carried out the bloody massacre on his family. The bodies of the family members were found with their arms crossed in rocks under their heads. And this is in, like, psychological killer speak. When a dead body is, like, posed or placed with care, it's a sign of remorse.
Right.
So, there's a couple theories about the why. There's one that he had a head injury.
Well, yeah.
Months before the event, Lawson sustained a head injury. Some family and friends theorized that it had altered his mental state and was related to the massacre. However, an autopsy and analysis of his brain at Johns Hopkins Hospital found no abnormalities.
When did that happen? I feel like Johns Hopkins wasn't around in 1926.
That's what I was shocked too. I think they exhumed.
Oh.
And something. I don't know when they started doing brain scans. Whatever they, if they, it was like back in the day, I'm sure it was not thorough.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to look and see how long Johns Hopkins has been around.
Taylor, play Santa's Ho Ho Ho's.
How long? It was founded in 1876.
Oh, okay, so that's totally reasonable.
Got it. All right. Anywho.
There was another theory, however. It was not until the book White Christmas, Bloody Christmas was published in 1990.
Friggin' the 90s.
I know.
White Christmas, Bloody Christmas.
Oh,
okay.
Not until that book was published in 1990 that a claim of Charlie sexually abusing Marie surfaced.
Oh.
Beginning with an anonymous source who heard a rumor during a tour of the Lawson home shortly after the murders.
Anonymous source heard a rumor. Okay.
I cannot reveal my sources.
Jesus.
The day before the book was to be published, the author received a phone call from Stella Lawson, a relative who had already been interviewed for the book. Stella said that she had overheard Fanny's sister-in-laws and aunts, including Stella's mother, Jetty Lawson, discussing how Fanny had confided in them that she had been concerned about an incestuous relationship between Charlie and Marie. Jetty died in early 1928, meaning Fanny had been suspicious of the incest at least that long before the murders in late 1929.
Okay.
More support for this theory was revealed in The Meaning of Our Tears, published by the same author in 2006. A close friend of Marie Lawson's, Ella May, came forward and disclosed that a few weeks before Christmas 1929, Marie confided in her that she was pregnant by her own father, and that both he and Fanny knew about it. Another close friend and neighbor to the Lawson family, Hill Hampton, stated that he knew of serious problems going on within the family, but he declined to elaborate. Shortly after the murders, Charlie's brother, Marion Lawson, opened the home on Brook Cove Road as a tourist attraction.
For crying out loud.
Didn't they all in the early 1900s, they did that with the Belisca House.
Yeah, and the Lizzie Borden House.
Yep. And Ed Gein.
Oh, really?
Yep.
I didn't know about that
one. Yeah, it was a museum. It was grisly. Anyway. So, the cake that Marie had baked on Christmas Day was displayed on the tour because visitors began to pick at the raisins on the cake to take as...
assholes.
They took them as souvenirs.
Like, why?
Just gonna be like,
oh, you need a raisin?
Like, it's a murder raisin.
From a crime scene? Bro.
Listen, we run a murder podcast.
That doesn't mean we're picking raisins from a crime scene. Jesus.
But I feel like there's a raisins in the sun joke in here somewhere, but I can't make
can't
it,
find it.
I can't make it work in my brain.
Oh, God.
So because people started to pick at the raisins on the cake, you can't have your cake and eat it too. Okay, I'll stop.
There it is.
There it is. There it is. I knew it'd be there. Can't have your fruit cake and eat it too.
You're a fruit cake.
I'm so sorry. So to deal with that issue, they put a covered glass cake server over it for many years. The event
is it gonna go bad?
I guess. Listen, there's a lot of preservatives in our food. I don't know. Cake doesn't last long enough, in a natural environment to know if it goes bad.
Oh, it's a mystery.
Yeah,
scientific mystery.
Yeah, no one's ever been able to just leave a cake lying out and be like, when's it gonna mold? So, the event inspired a number of songs and other tributes, including the murder ballad, The Murder of the Lawson Family, recorded by the Stanley Brothers in March 1956.
Why?
I don't... It was riveting. You can insert a snippet, unless we're going to get copy struck.
Yeah, we'd get struck down by the copyright gods.
Never mind.
Unless we want to pay for it, which I don't think we do.
I mean, it's 1956. Anyway, the case was also featured on an episode of the PRX podcast, Criminal. The Lawsons were laid to rest in a family graveyard established in 1908, originally for the use of the W.D. Browder family and selected friends and neighbors. You cannot get buried in it today. I got deep into the cemetery.
Oh, okay.
It is open for burials, but only for direct descendants of W.D. Browder.
Oh,
yeah. And then the surviving son, Arthur, was killed in a 1945 motor accident at the age of 32, leaving a wife and four children.
What horrible luck.
The entire family.
Wow. That's horrible.
Family annihilators always
get me.
It gets me too because I can't understand resenting the people who love you the most in the entire world. Like, I can't imagine having that animosity towards them.
Right. And you can just leave.
Yes.
You could just leave. Fake your own death.
I mean, I was going to be like, file for divorce and petition for custody. But yes, also fake your own death and move to South America.
Why not?
That too.
I mean, if death's got to be involved some way, that's the way I'd prefer it. Starting
life as a llama herder in Patagonia.
Yeah.
That sounds, I might just do that for fun.
That sounds good. Like,
that sounds like a good
life. We pack up our little location here and.
All we need is Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Wi-Fi and goats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go.
We got to herd something.
Oh, yeah.
I just picked goats. It could be anything. I don't really care for them. They're dead behind the eyes.
They're square eyes and they're screaming.
I hate it. I had to, when I worked at the zoo, I just had to sweep up one too many perfect marbles of goat shit.
Oh.
For me to be able to tolerate goats anymore.
I'm so sorry.
Anyway, so catch us next week when Taylor and I are living in Patagonia.
Yeah. With our llamas.
With our llamas and not goats.
No.
And. Don't murder your family this Christmas, please. We beg.
You please don't.
Just, I feel like it's so easy to not murder your entire family.
Or murder any family members. Let's not murder anybody on Christmas.
Yeah. This is time for, love. Go hug your parents if you have them. Go hug your siblings if you have them. Go hug your friends and be kind.
Maybe 6 feet apart with the hugging, but, the intention is there.
I got squirreled away in the middle of that sentence, but I always, as a kid, you know how people always said that like icicles are like the perfect murder weapon.
Oh yeah, because they like dissolve.
I always had this bad habit of like sucking candy canes into like a sharp stick.
Oh yeah.
And so my brain was always like, well, can you just rinse off, like shank somebody, clean off the candy cane, then eat the candy cane, and then the evidence is gone.
After you shank somebody?
Rinse it off.
Okay, I can see where your mind was going.
Yeah. This is why my mom put me in therapy as a child.
Listen, I think about the icicle being the perfect murder weapon probably way too often. Mm-hmm. It is something that crosses my mind many times a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, yeah.
I could see it.
I can see it.
I mean, people are going to know a crime was committed because there's blood.
Right. And somebody got stabbed with something sharp, but the weapon is gone. No fingerprints on the weapon because no that's motive. Gone. Oh, yeah. Got to be completely random.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, we don't condone this.
Transport a giant stabby icicle to the middle of the ocean.
Yeah.
Where it's no man's land.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No country can claim you.
No country can claim you. Stab them there.
Uh-huh.
Sail to Patagonia and live in Patagonia.
With us. In our office.
Well, not with us if you killed somebody. Preferably not. Don't look us up. Maybe move to Chile.
We're not going
to
be on the books. Patagonia, Jenny.
Don't hunt out our shed.
We're going to be living off the grid except for our Wi-Fi.
Don't ask for us by name. Anyway.
Oh, my God. All right. Anywho, follow us on the social meds. Join our Facebook group. Join us on Instagram, on Twitter. You can write us an Oogie Spooky Story. We are still accepting nightmare stories, dream stories, nightmare paralysis stories.
Send us whatever you got.
Yeah, just send us whatever.
Send us what you think your ideal murder weapon would be.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
That's a good one.
Have you committed the perfect crime? We want to know that, too. Go ahead and just tell us.
Send it anonymously.
Yeah. And yeah, be good to one another.
Do you have a bright and shiny?
Oh, yeah, I do. We got to go have dinner the other night and it was a lot of fun.
Oh, it was a lot of fun. We celebrated a milestone we achieved, I think, like back in August.
Yeah, yeah. We're on to like the next milestone we need to celebrate, but we are not caught up yet.
No, we're not.
But yeah, it was very fun. We got to go to dinner and they sat us on the same side of the booth, like an awkward first date.
We should have gotten a milkshake with two straws.
Yeah, absolutely.
I loved it. It was a fun time.
It was fun. That was my bright shiny. What's yours? Yeah.
I'm going to substitute a bright shiny for a fun fact.
Oh, okay.
1 gram of uranium has 20 billion calories.
What?
Yeah. So, and now it got me, I spiraled. Stay with me on this.
Uh-huh.
If I ate it, I know I shouldn't.
Yeah, if you did though.
I don't know where to find uranium.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it would kill me if I ate it. But before I ate it, before it killed me, what would my, what happened? 20, would I just get like, whoop, super instantly so fat?
I don't know.
Would I go into diabetic shock? It doesn't have sugar. It's just caloric value. It's just energy.
20 billion calories?
Yeah. 20 billion calories. Would I like Tasmanian devil like, and like spiral away into, what would happen?
I am not going to feel that bad about my Dairy Queen chicken strips anymore. Listen, though.
Go eat a freaking McChicken. It's not a gram of uranium.
What? Why do you know that?
I read it on the internet.
The freaking internet. Was there like a list of what other things?
Nah, it was just that.
Okay.
It was just that. Don't question the brain soup.
Got it. A floater.
A floater in the brain soup. Just let it be.
Oh, well, okay. Good. Okay, yeah. Cool.
So.
All right. Now be kind to one another.
Okay. Be kind to yourself.
Goodbye.
Bye.